Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 136. We're here to recap some news and notes from the last few days. Talk about a Bloom board because it's Tuesday night, everybody. So we're going to get you rocking and rolling on that. We are on week 10 of the baseball season. But let's talk a little fantasy baseball news, notes, and more. First off, I am on Twitter at BDentric, podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm another year older since we last chatted. So,
so close to the big day.
Last year in the 30s. So I'm feeling it today. I actually moved a couch down to the studio by myself today, and wouldn't recommend it. I'll be hurting in the morning, but yeah, 39. I feel. Yeah, older than 38, which I guess is the proper progression.
Well, we got some people in the chat wishing you happy birthday, and then Joe Rico Geezer.
Hey, I can take that from a Rico. He's a young buck. And if I'm a Geezer, I don't know what you are.
I wasn't waiting for that. I was waiting for some kind
You're
of comment
like
on that.
Mr. Burns,
decrepit. I think I'm wise beyond my years is what I think I am. So whatever you prefer on that one, Mr. Bloomfield.
Actually, after your weekend of nonstop grilling and noons, you're well fed. You're good to go.
Yeah, I feel I haven't done that in a long time, and that's when you realize how old you are during those days.
Yep.
Definitely back to reality is where we are now. I had salad for lunch, light dinner. Like we're back to kind of, you know, lots of water, those kind of things. As you get older, you realize. Very important in life. So, yeah, that's where we are right now in this household, getting back to reality.
It was an impressive showing what you did last weekend.
So. It's okay. I did go to Costco today and go shopping, got a pack of tri-tips, got some other stuff. So this weekend, it'll be, weather's going
to
be nice.
We don't want you to go into withdrawal. We don't want
Memorial Day weekend.
Cold turkey here.
Memorial Day weekend, we'll have some fun. Don't you worry.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, three-day weekend for all of you that observe. I will be working on Monday, so have fun. But that's a whole other podcast for a whole other day. Besides the birthdays, congratulations. Happy birthday, 39. It's never looked so good on you, at least. Let's talk some news and notes here. Zach Eflin goes to the IL on Monday with a lower back injury. The Rays and Eflin both say it's similar to last year's injury where he missed only 2 weeks. The Rays for now are saying 2 to 4 weeks for him to be down and out. So, that's a bummer. I think you're holding if you can right now, especially if it's only 2 weeks, you sit and hold. Ryan Pepiot is going to be activated and start on Wednesday. So he's going to be back after taking 100+ miles an hour off the shin. So, any thoughts on Eflin Pepiot Rays rotation?
Kind of you see the news and you kind of take a look and see what Eflin has done. Kind of an L for me this so far. Zach Eflin has not, and Zach Eflin is someone who I was pretty high on entering the season as kind of that like SP2 going around like what Bobby Miller, which also hasn't worked out, but career low strikeout rate for Zach Eflin, career low swinging strike rate for Zach Eflin. The control's been there, but I was just at least hoping or hedging that the Tampa version of Zach Eflin that we saw last year would carry over this year, and it absolutely has not. So I agree it's a hold, but Zach Eflin quietly has been, I don't know, like the ratios are fine, 117 whip, 412 ERA, but the K's have not been there. Sounds like, so yeah, Pepiot's coming back. Sounds like Tyler Alexander gets another turn or two, maybe. Yep. Tampa Bay's rotation, speaking of not striking anyone out, that's Tyler Alexander. So I think that's just one of your many 15 team streamers. I think Alexander's next two starts are against Kansas City and then at Baltimore. So don't think you want to go there.
Yeah, a fun one for Eflin, and he wants to stay in Tampa Bay, like Eflin versus Cy Savali for the rest of the year.
You had to twist that knife, didn't you?
Yeah, it's been a rough go for Savali there. Lytle's been good. Bradley's looked pretty good since coming back. I hit around a little yesterday with strikeouts. They're still very much there, so that's great. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. I'd hold Eflin if you can. Pepiot was awesome before he got hit in the leg. I'm hoping he's going to be fine. I assume he'd be fine, but he'd be somewhere to keep an eye on as well. I'm a good host most of the time, bad host on this one because I forgot to read my handwriting on the paper here. We do have an announcement to make before we go further in the news.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a save the date. Mr. Bloomfield, what should we be saving the date for?
Well, we are getting married. No,
I'm kidding. This podcast is almost at that time, yes.
Save the date. First pitch, Arizona. That's right. Yeah, even I reminded you to, or at least asked you to bring it up at the beginning, and then I didn't. The dates have been officially announced for first pitch. It's October 31st through November 3rd. So if you are making plans, making arrangements, haven't booked flights or whatever yet, I certainly get it. Registration is not open yet through Baseball HQ's site, but it's just for planning purposes. Maybe score some points with the spouse, work on that, and then reserve that weekend for first pitch Arizona. We will both be Joe Arico in the chat says bachelor's night on Halloween. I'll be at the bar. We will, Bubba, you and I will be out trick or treating with our little kids, and we're going to fly in the next morning, November 1st. So we're going to miss a little bit of the conference, but I think staying an extra day too to make up for it. So
yeah, we might not be flying out Sunday morning as we used to. We might actually have a little more fun than usual. We'll see. And the one thing I will say for anybody that might like to partake in partying and enjoy Halloween, Arizona State is close by, and that is a great time. Been there, done that. That was over 20 years ago, but been there, done that. And I'm going to say that is a phenomenal time on Halloween. You could also probably go to downtown Scottsdale. That's probably a doozy. So there's plenty to do if you're looking for fun on Halloween over at First Pitch Arizona.
Hey, or the podcast room. I don't know if we're doing podcast rooms that night or whatever, but we'll figure it out. And hopefully we will be on the docket for a live show Friday night or Saturday night. We'll get that all sorted out. But yeah, early heads up. First Pitch Arizona in Mesa at Wrigleyville, the Cubs spring training home. It's about 15 minutes from Phoenix Airport. It's awesome spot, awesome time. If anyone is curious, has never been before, just wants to ask us about it, our collective DMs are open, so we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have if you're on the fence or have never done it. I think it's the best weekend of the year, so cannot wait.
It is the best weekend. I used to do football trips with the boys and stuff, and it's been first pitch the last few years for me. That's been my big getaway. Well, one of my getaways between that and kids stuff. So, yeah, First Pitch Arizona must happen. It's the one time a year Ryan and I actually get to hang out in person and talk about the show and get stuff possible. So, pretty, pretty good stuff. All right, back to the boring stuff. News and notes, injuries, and more. Xander Bogaerts, he left Monday's game with a shoulder injury, game one.
Sound like me.
He missed Monday's game one. They had a doubleheader with a shoulder injury. Didn't play in game two, of course, because that was just kind of standard operating procedure. I have not seen any further like locked in details on Xander Bogaerts since that news came out. So what are you doing? I know we have a full week in NFBC per se, but at least we can wait on news. But what's your thoughts on Mr. Bogaerts?
It looked bad. I don't know if you saw the replays or the highlights.
He was hurting.
Yeah, it was like shades of Trevor Story, I thought. It was like same kind of diving for a ball in on his shoulder wrong. And so I had those vibes originally. So good news that it's not that serious. You're obviously holding Xander Bogaerts, though, has been really bad, man. I didn't realize Xander Bogaerts was hitting .219 this year. A lot of that's BABIP driven, but like there's also hasn't been a ton of hard contact for Xander Bogaerts, only 8 barrels so far all season. So quietly kind of not doing anything. 14 RBI all year for Bogaerts in a lineup that has otherwise been pretty good. So just interesting to see how slow that start has been. I don't think there's any, like, if it's an extended absence. I mean, Luis Arraez has played second base, has filled in for Bogaerts, but then there's basically just like a revolving door of DH behind that. There's your Donovan Solano, Tyler Wade, Jose Azucar. I don't really see like a viable fantasy pickup here if Bogaerts went to the IL or something.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. When Bogaerts was taken out of game one, Tyler Wade went and played second base for game two of the doubleheader. Luis Arraez played second base. So I didn't look at Tuesday's lineup that Bogaerts was out of. I'm assuming Luis Arraez played second base as well.
Yep, and led off.
I do want to mention, though, before he got hurt in game one, Bogaerts was riding a six-game hitting streak where he had two home runs and two stolen bases, hitting .320 over those six games, 9% barrel, almost 60% hard hit rate. He was starting to heat up, and that's like the worst timing for, like, if you've been suffering through the doldrums of Bogaerts, because he's literally one of those guys, you just set it and forget it. He's one of those guys that he finally started coming around and kind of slipped on the banana peel. So we'll kind of wait and see how that one plays out. Jonathan Hernandez of the Cleveland Guardians, prospect for the Cleveland Guardians, was recalled on Monday to join the big club.
Laureano.
Jonathan Rodriguez. I was an idiot. I had to make sure I was reading it right. Jonathan Rodriguez, DFAing Laureano, which is crazy because if you look at Laureano's stat line, almost a 40% K rate this season. Absolutely horrific. But Hernandez gets the call, and it's interesting just because in AAA, 276, seven homers, four stolen bases, some talent to be had there, but it always seems like there's too many players anyways in Cleveland. So what do you have when you look at the wonderful HQ prospect discussions?
That's where I go. Company man, I guess, but it is great info at HQ, Baseball HQ. We put out a scouting report for every call-up that every day that gets called up. So Jonathan Rodriguez is a 7C prospect, which is pretty much middle of the road in terms of his long-term potential and ceiling. There's no speed, there's strikeout issues, and I think there's playing time issues in the short term for Jonathan Rodriguez. So I'm not really all that interested, especially because, I mean, Stephen Kwan might come back soon. It's just another body in the outfield there. So until Rodriguez starts playing regularly against right-handers, which he did start Tuesday night's game, he hit seventh in right field against a righty. But even still, the no speed and strikeout issues, like that combination for someone seeing major league pitching for the first time, is kind of a no-go for me.
Yep, that's fair. Kind of want to wait and see. We've seen a lot of these prospects take some time to get going. Most of them haven't got going. Like Beck starting to hit at least. Loperfido's been better. So time will tell on some of these guys, and I'm just not excited to go breaking the bank on them for now. But we will see. We will see on that one. Garrett Whitlock, this was a bummer because he throws a rehab start, 4 2/3 innings, like 63 pitches or something. And he was like, oh, I feel great. This is awesome. Then he woke up the next day, and his elbow was hurting. So he had imaging done. He has a partial tear in his elbow. He went to go likely have surgery on Tuesday. We haven't got the official word, but I believe he flew to Alabama to go see another doctor, which is where the Red Sox send their guys to get surgery. So Whitlock's likely out for the year.
Yeah, it sucks. It just sucks given how well Whitlock had started the year. So it's a bummer. I remember mentioning this on our last show. It's like Cooper Criswell would be the sixth man once Whitlock comes back and an injury will strike, and we didn't even have to wait a week for that to happen. So I think Cooper Criswell's spot in the Boston rotation is safe, would actually line up for a two-step next week at Baltimore and versus Detroit. So that's mildly attractive, not the at Baltimore part, but certainly the at home against Detroit. And Criswell, like from a skills perspective, not bad at all. 18% strikeout minus walk. He's got a 2.76 ERA. He's not that good. But could this be like a mid-high threes ERA type that you maybe stream the back end of your rotation in the right matchups? Absolutely. So he's interesting to me in 15-teamers, and I think he's got a spot pretty much locked down in Boston for as long as he's effective.
Yeah, I've had him in some 15s streaming already, like a bench streamer in some 15s. For a while. So, like, I guess if there's any silver lining for this situation, I'll take it in that regard. I could see him being like a Ben Lively type in 12s during the right weeks. You could put him out there and send him back to the shelf. So, yeah, I'm with you on Criswell. He's definitely got some legs in this scenario. And Whitlock, hopefully, they're talking about just doing the brace, which is the 9-month procedure. So, he might actually come back at some time next year. But again, let's wait and see on that. And, it just sucks. He might be better left for the bullpen, it looks like, these days. Last but not least, we have Max Muncy, who over the weekend went on the IL with an oblique injury. Miguel Vargas was one of the players called up over the weekend for the Dodgers. The report on Tuesday actually says Max Muncy will take swings Wednesday or Thursday, then have a 1 to 2 game rehab stint. He could return sometime next week. That's the plan for Muncy. Again, obliques are just, you know, so temperamental, so it's hard to be specific on that. I guess the thing I wanted to mention is, hey, Muncy's just not playing well, period. But Miguel Vargas got the call, and that got everybody giddy can be, yet Dave Roberts quickly reminded them that he's Dave Roberts, and he doesn't want to play him every day.
Yeah, that's the shitty part. Miguel Vargas, who I'm still very interested in. Like, this is a former, I say former, he's still just 24, but like a former consensus top five, top 10 prospect. And obviously has not had the best showing in the majors, but as we've seen many, many times, it's sometimes the third, fourth, or even fifth time coming back up to the majors where it finally clicks. So Miguel Vargas hitting 295 with 8 homers, 8 steals in AAA this year with a great strikeout rate, some hard contact. So you love all that. It's just, yeah, it's, you said it best. Dave Roberts reminds us he's Dave Roberts. And so Miguel Vargas did start on Tuesday night. They got a double in the action that I was watching leading up to the show. But just 2 starts in 5 games so far for Miguel Vargas in a somewhat crowded outfield. James Outman finally got optioned to the minors, but Jason Hayward just kind of slid right in and took that. So I don't know. It's hard to recommend Miguel Vargas until we get more regular playing time. The flip side of that is once he starts getting playing time, he becomes more expensive. So maybe take your shot if you have room to stash, because I still believe in the skills for Miguel Vargas. It's just that playing time has to come through.
Yep, I'm with you. And that's kind of been always my deterrent when it came to Miguel Vargas and most guys on the Dodgers. So I wasn't originally in on Pajes, and I ended up picking him up in one league when he was still available. And that's kind of been an up and down roller coaster ride still to this point in time. So I can't say I'm in love with that move, but that's just the Dodgers. They have a handful of guys to play every single day. There's no doubt about that. And they also get paid $1 billion combined. And then they have like 3 positions that they rotate guys through. So that's just kind of where the Dodgers are, and just buckle up and see where that one goes. But all right, that'll wrap up the news and notes. There's a ton of stuff, of course, but those are the kind of major ones for the last couple of days here. And we'll get you caught up on Thursday with what took place on Wednesday and Thursday, of course. But let's talk Bloom board season. And this is a fun one, Mr. Ryan Bloomfield. What do you have for us tonight?
All right. We have the episode titled The 3 Types of Strikes. And we've done this one before, sometime last year. So if you listen to that episode, I'm going to kind of go through the basis of what these 3 types of strikes are again, just for all new listeners. And it's a good refresher every now and then to not only know what the stat is, but what is good and what is bad, what's the league average for that stat. So basically we're looking at pitchers here, and we want to look at the 3 types of strikes, and that it's kind of a hierarchy to it. You've got your actual strike. So what percentage, your strike percentage, what percentage of pitches are you throwing that just result in strikes, either whiffs, called strikes, foul balls, whatever. It's actually, you all hear me talk about ball percentage all the time. It's actually a really good, it's a great indicator for walk rate and control. So I usually refer to it as ball percentage because it ties very closely with walk rate. But for the theme of the episode tonight, we'll just take the inverse, and it's strike percentage. So that's kind of your base level of strike, which is good. Even better than that is CSW, which has been coined by Nick Pollock and Alex Fast over at Pitcher List. CSW is called plus swing strike rates, basically takes those like foul balls out of the equation. Really good indicator for like strikeout minus walk rate. Your league average for CSW is right around 27-28%. I didn't mention earlier, but strike percentage is around 64% for strikes for major league average. CSW is 27-28%. And then the third type of strike, what I think is the holy grail, we mention it all the time on our shows and whatnot, is swinging strike rate. That is basically just whiffs and foul tips, depending on which site you go to. I think Fangraphs doesn't count foul tips. Well, Savant does, but whatever. Swinging strikes is, I think foul tips should be a swinging strike personally, but swinging strikes is just, your ability to miss bats. It's the best type of strike out there. It correlates very closely with strikeout rate, and your league average swinging strike rate is right around 11-11.5%. So what I did with this board is I took starting pitchers who have thrown 40 innings this season, that are above average in all three types of strikes. And there's 27 of them. I ordered them by ERA. It's fascinating to see the wide, wide range of ERA from 0.84 all the way up to 5.8. And figure we would use that as our launching point, our jumping off point to talk about some of these guys. Color-coded, of course. There's no red on this because we're doing average and better. But white is average. And green is very good. So yes, naturally, we're color-coding this stuff.
A couple things here. Nick Pollock in the chat, what's CSW? And then he also mentions that foul tips should be swinging strikes and is on pitcher list.
Agreed. Okay. Here. There is a debate to that. But yeah, Fangraphs, I believe, at least last year, did not count foul tips as swinging strikes. So their numbers are always a little bit lower than some of the stuff that I see. But whatever.
I don't know how easy this is to pull up, but Sarah Sanchez says, I'm dying to know where Skeens would be on this table without the minimum innings pitched. So that's something we can maybe figure out later at some other time on this one. But I'd imagine I can do towards some the things. Top.
I can do some things. We'll figure it out. I'll look it up.
Rico says Flaherty's just unreal. Yes, we'll get there. And that's Ryan's guy. Not going to say that one, but yeah, pretty fun stuff on that one. All right, let's start with the GOAT. Out the gate, and people corrected me on my pronunciation a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I literally heard the broadcast by the Cubs pronounce it the way I've been pronouncing it the entire season. So whoever told me that, kindly turn around and walk away.
Kindly leave a 5-star review.
Yes, that's the way I'm going to put this was. But Shoto Imanaga is how they pronounce it on TV, not Iminaga. It's Imanaga. So he's been absolutely amazing. 0.84 ERA. 68% strike rate, 28% CSW, 16% swinging strike. It's just been an electric factory. Like the ERA indicators obviously are not going to be as low as he has been. So there will be a time when things might get to him. I'm not expecting much. Like a 302 CR is still pretty good, but he does give up a lot of fly balls. There'll be some windy Wrigley days that could catch up with him potentially. So what's your thoughts when you see Shota Imanaga, who's been just an electric factory on and off the field, honestly, because when he gets to do interviews now, the personality is just, I loved him just pitching. And then I hear him talk in interviews. I'm just like, I want to be this guy's friend. Like he's amazing. So what do you got on Imanaga?
Yeah. Like a point taken on. Yes. No ERA indicator is going to ever be 0.84 unless you're Mason Miller. For a starting pitcher, like Imanaga's or whatever you pronounce it, is 3 ERA roughly if you look at a lot of the sub indicators. So yes, there's been you can both be lucky and good, and that has been Shota this season, and it you know, deservedly on this board with dark green strike percentage and swing strike rate. That means he's missing a ton of bats and he's throwing a ton of strikes, which leads to a very low walk rate. I think 3%, 4% walk rate, which is just crazy given the amount of bats that that Shota misses. So obviously I think he's extremely legit. I don't know if you answered there was a Tout Wars like roundtable question. I'll get ahead of it and throw it out there now. It was basically Zola put together like would you rather a bunch of pitchers, and it was kind of the classic Shota versus Yamamoto, who is also on this list further on down the line. Who would you rather have rest of season? I think the touts leaned Yamamoto. I don't know, Bubba. Since you did not partake, I will lean the floor to you. What do you think about that rest of season, Shota or Yoshinobu Yamamoto?
I would go Shota, but I get the Yamamoto. They're very similar. Yamamoto has the longer pedigree, I'd imagine, but Shota's pretty darn good. And that was talked about by many people about how he kind of was the odd man out. And like in WBC, he was the better pitcher. Like there's a lot of things in that regard, but Yamamoto was like a back-to-back third version of Cy Young over there. The guy was just elite. I'll take Shota, but I think Shota maybe gets the ratios where Yamamoto gets the wins, if that makes sense. So I'd go that direction.
I went Yamamoto. It's close. For me, it was the wins as kind of the tiebreaker. It's the wins and Wrigley in the summers, a bit of a different animal.
So is L.A. L.A. is one of the best hitters ballparks in the summertime. You know, prove that.
But dude, the Cubs are, sorry, Sarah, who is in the chat. The Cubs are so bad around Shota, like not getting wins. The bullpen's awful. Sarah Sanchez actually has a comment in the chat, which is really good. The CSW for Imanaga is by far the lowest of these three. Like, it's just kind of white. The called strike rate for Shota is very low. They miss strikes at the top of the zone for him all the time. So that's an interesting observation from Sarah, who watches a ton and goes to a ton of Cubs games.
She's pretty much there watching it live, keeping her scorebook, which I've told her many times off airs that just jealous of that, because I grew up watching baseball games as a kid. I took a book while my buddies were running around, you know, horse playing, and I was just keeping score like a nerd, and I loved every bit of it. So, yeah, fun stuff there. All right, let's talk Raylo, Ronaldo Lopez. It was a fun one that the Braves picked him up. Like, oh, we're going to stretch him out. We're going to put him in the rotation to start the season. And many of us were just like, well, how long is it going to take to stretch him out? What are we going to get out of him? Well, so far, so good. 1.54 ERA to go with that 65% strike rate, a 30% CSW on basically a 12% swinging strike rate. He's been outstanding. It feels like every time I watch him, it seems like a blow-up's coming, and then he dodges bullets and gets through it. But the end results have been really good outside of the bullpen blowing a win on Monday.
Yeah, I'm still not totally sold, though, on Raylo. Like, if you rostered Raylo and then this is what you have, like, kudos, you have already far exceeded any expectations here, and you're playing with house money, so to speak. But the biggest things for me with Ronaldo Lopez, just the yes, he has the missed bats, but it's just kind of slightly above average, the swinging strike rate. And so the K rate is marginal. The biggest thing for me is workload. He's already got 46 innings thrown this season, and Lopez the last three seasons has been at 57, 65, 66. I know that's mostly been out of a bullpen role, not injury related, but I just wonder what this looks like in the second half. We've already seen a pretty big drop in strikeout rate from Lopez in April to May, and whiff rate from April to May at a 15% swinging strike in April, down to 11% so far this month. I just wonder, like, does that decline kind of continue throughout the season? But hell of a start for Lopez. And again, if you rostered him, you're quite happy no matter what happens from here on out.
Yep. Here's a big L for me. Tarik Skubal, 1.8 ERA with a 71% strike rate, which is bonkers. Not the highest on this list, but second highest on this list. 34% CSW, 15% swinging strike. And he literally is just like Ranger Suarez is the only guy I think that's been more dominant than Tarik Skubal so far, which is telling. And Ranger's not even on this list, which is nuts. Nope. So Tariq's been that dominating, which is pretty wild to see.
Yeah, big L for me too. If I'm looking back and thinking and wondering where I missed, it's the kind of like the Tyler Glasnow effect. We have no idea which pitchers are going to get hurt, which ones are going to be healthy. And B, I think I underrated just how good Tarik Skubal's skills were in the second half of last season. He's basically continued that so far this year, and I think is the best pitcher in baseball right now. So, you know, I could restate the numbers we have on the screen, but like Tarik Skubal is absolutely dominant, and I don't see that slowing down at all. The only chink in the armor here is he plays for the Tigers. It's not his fault. But they're not going to get him a ton of run support, but whatever. Best pitcher in baseball for my money.
Yes, he's electric factory. He's much CTV. I don't get to see a lot of games on TV, but when I can look at highlights and stuff, I'm looking school. And it's absolutely amazing to see there. A Tigers fan, Michael Cicchini in the chat, says SP1 school. Yes, I'm biased. it's been... I'm assuming Tigers fan just based on the comments. So that was just me having fun. And I know Mike's got a sense of humor because he joins us every week, every episode. We love it. So we get to kind of know our listeners that jump in here and hang out with us quite a bit. But yeah, Skubal's been great. I don't really have a whole lot to say besides just stay healthy, please. Like, just stay. I don't know, I guess how many innings do we see is the $1 million question. And that's kind of a trend for a handful of these guys on this list, like almost a third at least of this list. It feels like there's a lot of innings questions on here, so it'll be interesting to see how that transitions, or if they get closer to their innings, how does this number kind of maybe fall a little bit or something. That'll be an interesting, like, maybe these are sell high guys potentially. Like, I'm not saying sell high on Skubal, but just in general thought process on some of these guys might be time to get them now before, you know, you got Raylo. There's like I said, a lot more we're going to talk about here with some innings limits. We have a listener's question that has three they want to talk about three guys and they all have innings limits. So stuff like that to think about there. All right, John Gray's next on this list, and I'm really glad he's on this list because he has been outstanding this season. I really got to dig in on him on a first pitch episode like last week on his last start or something, and I just looked back, and outside of his opening start of the season, which was rough, dude has been nuts. Before Tuesday night start, where we went only five innings, he gave up two runs. He went eight starts, nine outings, because he had a small start or whatever. One or two earned runs or less in every outing, one earned run or less in seven of them. That is insane.
Wow.
With 50 Ks over 48 and a third innings. He had a 1.3 ERA with a 3.16 XFIP in those eight starts. Just, and it's still a 2.93 BABIP, so it's not like he's getting super crazy unlucky. 82.7% left on base, but he had a 46% ground ball rate. Like, the dude was in another zone. It was just beautiful to see. Got hurt a little bit on Tuesday night. We're kind of waiting to see the impact of that injury, but I was glad to see him, especially high on this list, because he has been outstanding, Bloomfield. So what do you have on John Gray?
Probably my most rostered starting pitcher.
Yeah, you've been a big John Gray fan. That's true. That's very
him
true.
And but in full disclosure, because I'm always, you know, self-deprecating myself, right along Griffin Canning and who the hell was that other Angels pitcher?
Reed Detmers. So Chase Silseth.
No. Silseth. God. Yes. Yes. Those guys were all kind of going next to each other. I gobbled up a bunch of them. But yes, Gray was one of the – we'll focus on the positive here with John Gray. It has been awesome. And he's really – this is a little bit of a pitch mix change guy. He's basically a two-pitch pitcher now, throwing his slider more often than his four-seam fastball for the first time. And the slider is just lethal. 20% swinging strike. He throws it for strikes. And obviously the four-seamer misses bats, gets ground balls, and throws for strikes too. So John Gray, yes, he's not a 208 pitcher, but could he stick 325, 340, something like that the rest of the way? The reason John Gray has a 208 ERA, I think he's given up like two home runs all season. So yep. that will change. But no, the skills look fantastic for John Gray. Like I and on Texas, on a lineup that should give him some run support. I don't see any reason why this slows down unless this groin injury that he left the game Tuesday night with is something serious. That's really the only thing that can slow him down is injury. And John Gray, I think the last few years, 149, 127, 157 innings. So the durability has been there, at least compared to some of these other guys.
And that's one of the reasons I kind of like was interested in him in drafts. I didn't have nearly as much as you did. I like minimal shares, but I have some. Is like I think when we talked about it on our preview shows, is when you get to those middle rounds, it's like, do you take the gambles, take the durability? What do you want? And John Gray always stood out to about a guy that, you know, out like any pitcher can get hurt, as we've seen, but year in and year out, he puts up innings, which is what you want to see out of some of these guys. And pretty solid stuff. Like you said, the ratios, even if it gets kind of quote-unquote back to normal, 3.2, 3.3 K per inning, get your dubs. Like, he's going to put together a good season if he can stay healthy. So I'm 100% with you on that one. I'm also happy to see you Darvish this high up here. This is big. 2.08 ERA, the ageless wonder, who I was a big fan of entering this season. I was kind of clowned on my rankings because I had him so high on this one. 68, not from you, Ryan. I'm talking about in general. You don't.
I was probably. I was not a Darvish guy, so I was probably mildly poking the bear.
Yeah, 68% K strikeout rate or strike percentage rate. Sorry, 27% swing CSW, 12.3% swing and strike. But what I want to mention real quick: last four starts, 24 innings pitched, zero earned runs, three walks, 24 Ks. He's actually gone 25 innings in a row without a run, the longest streak by any Japanese pitcher. And let me remind you all real quick, Yu Darvish is 37 years old. He'll be 38 in August. Dude looks good right now. So, and I trust me, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm waiting for the age to all of a sudden go, oops, sorry. But right now he is locked in. And to top it off, that last outing at the Atlanta Braves, start before that was against the Dodgers, both seven shutout innings with 16 Ks. So, yeah, pretty good stuff.
And he's got the Aaron Nola every other year effect to him.
We need to make mental notes.
That's probably why I don't like the guy. 2019, 398 ERA, then 201, then 422 in 2021. The next season, 310, then 456 last year. And then, Bubba, like you said, in his age 37 season, Yu Darvish is doing this. A big miss for me so far. That recent run that he's been on, that's a great call. And even in May, the three starts in May, 27% strikeout minus walk. Like, the skills have absolutely taken off as Yu Darvish has progressed through the season, which is always a great sign. But anytime you get somebody missing more bats, quite a few more bats than what we saw last year, throwing more strikes, this is impressive and something that I am certainly missing out on all my teams. I don't think I drafted a single Yu Darvish.
It's okay. There's always 2026.
Yeah, that's right. When dude's 39 and posted 250.
You'll know ERA. What he feels like after this year. You'll have a good idea on how that feels going out there. So
yeah.
Don't you worry about it. Cutter Crawford, this is a fun one. Out of all the kind of good pitching outings we've seen from some of these Red Sox pitchers, I believe I'm triple checking. He's the only Red Sox that made the list. So that's pretty fun. Cutter Crawford, 2.17 ERA, 67% strike rate, 27% CSW, 11.6% swinging strike rate. So strike rate, swing. I'm going to miss this up all day, folks. I apologize now. It's a tongue twister. But Cutter Crawford has been really, really good. There are outings, though, like you look at him and he'll give up four runs here and have a few issues here because he'll get into the walks or the long ball. But as a whole, the dude's, he's getting the strikeouts at the same time, which is at worst what you're looking for on some of your fantasy starters. So what do you see when you see Cutter Crawford? Because I don't know. This is obviously also another one of the innings limits guys, probably.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, 130 innings last year, so I'm not too worried.
That's not bad. Yeah, he might get to run.
Big pitch mix change guy. Depending which site you look at, it's either sweeper or slider that he threw less than 10% of the time last year and now is throwing roughly a quarter of the time so far in 2024. So, again, anytime you see a jump in skill like this with a change in approach, with a change in pitch mix, as well as just what Boston's doing in general, like I just feel organizationally, if that's a word, something's going right there in Boston given the success that pretty much everyone in that rotation has had. So not too worried about the innings for Cutter Crawford. Yes, he's been very fortunate in terms of the home run ball, a 4% homer to fly ball rate, stranding a ton of batters. So like that's not going to hold, but I think this is a legit mid-3 ZRA pitcher. Again, with that approach change to drive the skills growth, it looks really damn good to me.
Yeah, he's impressive. So I'm glad to see, he checks the boxes for you because he's a pretty, pretty solid option there. Well, you know, we made fun of Yu Darvish and his age. Well, let's talk about a 35-year-old pitcher in Chris Sale who, you know, has missed time in recent years due to injuries. And now he looks like vintage Cy Young Chris Sale playing for the Atlanta Braves right now. And he's in the midst of a hot streak, one would say. Over his last five starts, Sale has thrown 32 innings, allowing 2 runs, striking out 43 in that stretch, which is nuts. He has a high left on base rate, so give him some touch there. But a near 51% ground ball rate to go with this 33.3% K to walk, which is asinine the way we talk about that stat. 70% strike rate on the season, 34% CSW, 15.5% swinging strike rate. Chris Sale is a guy that Bloomfield, I know preseason, you and I both were like interested in. The price tag just kept jumping though, as we got closer and closer to the start of the season. But man, if you still bought the hike, it was well worth it.
Yeah. And I don't think we, just in general, at least that I've seen or heard, are giving Chris Sale even enough credit. These skills are right up there, if not equal or better than Tarik Skubal. Like, that's how good Chris Sale has been. You look, I mean, a 70% strike rate is right with Skubal, exact same CSW, and Chris Sale is actually missing, it's a slightly higher whiff rate than Tarik Skubal, who I just said is the number one starting pitcher in baseball. Chris Sale has been that good. Now, obviously, you want to talk about innings limits, or not really just innings limits, but like workload concerns. Chris Sale, the last few seasons, let's see, shoulder in 2018, elbow in 2019, Tommy John in 2020/21, a wrist in 22, shoulder inflammation in 2023.
That's a list.
Yeah, like that's the concern. But if Chris Sale can stay healthy. And again, he is healthy right now. And to me, that is huge for starting pitchers, because I'm continually of the belief is we have no idea what we're doing trying to project these pitcher injuries. Chris Sale, like, could win the National League Cy Young.
Yep.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that happened. So
no, like, if you ended the voting right now, I know it's May 21st, that's premature. I'm pretty sure Chris Sale does win it. Like, I put some confidence behind that. So it's just a matter of, can he keep it going for a full season? That's the million-dollar question. He could be a guy that, like Kershaw is, can he just give you 140? I mean, that probably might still be good enough, as good as he's been. So it's impressive to see what Chris Sale's done. He's holding the fort down since Spencer Strider's not there. Like, he's keeping that train rolling strong. Ronaldo Lopez is doing.
You got me? You're good?
Yeah. You're back.
Thank you. Thank you. What
the heck, a different mic.
Yeah, I'm fixed.
All right, we should be back to normal.
There we go. Dulcet tones back.
I don't know why it's doing that this again. It's only the show. No other show I do. This is back-to-back shows. Good stuff. But yeah, Sale's been outstanding, and it's really good to see it. Hopefully continues on. Sarah Sanchez in the chat says, there's some team out there that has Tarik Skubal, Chris Sale, Jared Jones, and Jack Flaherty. That would be a fun team. And what I was going to say before I got distracted because of the mic going out, Chris Sale's a guy that, like Chris Sale and some other pitchers that I know we talked about on this show after I had the podcast with Draft Cheat, and he really opened my eyes to, I like taking risks, but he made the point with pitchers, take even more risk, take them while they're healthy, get the good innings out of them, replace them later. That's why all of a sudden I started drafting like Kyle Bradish and some other guys late. Like, I'll take the risk. Like, I'll take, it's the reverse of what I mentioned with Sale, but it's like, if he's dropping so much, take the chance. And I that's where I did get a couple pieces of Sale, and I got much more into like a Tyler Glass now, stuff like that. Like, take it while you can, see what happens. Obviously, we could wake up after the next start from these guys, and the way baseball's going, anything can happen. But you got to bank at least 8 good starts, like outstanding starts. And that's pretty hard to find out there. So something to think about going forward in the future with these pitchers. All right, Zach Wheeler. This is a fun one because he got shelled 2 starts ago by the Miami Marlins of all team. Gave up 6 runs to the Marlins. Other than that, he's been pretty darn electric on the season. 2.52 ERA, 66% strike percentage, 29% CSW, 13.8% swinging strike rate. Wheeler is just that boring, steady machine. And I think you and I both had him basically towards the top of our rankings for this exact reason, basically.
And I think was basically was he after Strider, the number one pitcher?
When Cole went down, he was.
Once Cole went down. So I guess after Strider, the number one pitcher, that would make him the number two pitcher, according to my math. So yeah, Zach Wheeler, a machine is correct, like a robot. This is someone who's just like been the same over the last 4 seasons. And that is not a bad thing. So yes, the troubling blow up against the Marlins, but we all have bad days. Not worried about that. Zach Wheeler is doing quite well for himself, returning that early spot where he was drafted.
All right, let's talk Corbin Burnes, and let's have some fun with stats here. Corbin Burnes has made 10 starts for the Baltimore Orioles this year. All starts have had 3 earned runs or less. He's made 7 quality starts because he went 5 2/3 in 2 of them and 5-1. So 7 quality starts. 60 Ks and 59 innings pitched, 52% ground ball rate. He might not be dominating, but Corbin Burnes has been good. And looking at these numbers, 65% strike percentage, 31% CSW, and a 12.7% swinging strike rate would suggest that Corbin Burnes is doing just fine, Mr. Bloomfield.
Yeah, I wonder if we're seeing the next iteration of Burnes here, because we're not seeing the mid-30 strikeout rate from peak Corbin Burnes that we saw in 2021 and 2022. The K rate's kind of pedestrian at 26%. I mean, it's above average, but for an ace, it's pedestrian. But what we're seeing from Corbin Burnes is a big uptick in ground ball rate. So he's kind of counteracting the lower Ks with more ground balls, throwing more sliders, more curveballs to get those ground balls. Change up for Corbin Burnes, even though he doesn't throw it that often, has been a big driver of the ground ball rate. So I just wonder, like, if Burnes is just kind of adapting as he gets older, and that's that's what the great ones do. So I want to see more strikeouts from Burns before I say he's like a top five pitcher the rest of the way. But you add in the team context here, both the park and the run support that the Orioles would give you, minus Craig Kimbrel blowing saves in the ninth, but Corbin Burns, yes, he looks fine for someone I was not all that interested in draft season.
No doubt about it. Michael Cicchini in the chat says, despite my homerism for Scooble, I take Wheeler as SP1. Yeah, the durability that Wheeler has, again, obviously could be hurt tomorrow. Yep. The durability that Wheeler has is pretty darn good. A couple more, and then I'll start just jumping around here, but I want to hit on guys like Yusei Kikuchi, because I don't think he stands out to many when you say his name. 2.6 ERA, 66% strike rate, 29% CSW, 11.1% swinging strike. He's only gone over six innings once this year, but the dude still has a 20%+ K to walk. He's getting that done because he has a sub 5% walk rate, which is outstanding. So he's doing he's almost like the American League version of Sonny Gray, where he's just getting the job done. And they're actually kind of close together on a list, but I have Gray on the top of my head because he was about six. Keeps him in the game, does his thing. And Kikuchi's doing it, even though it was like 2 years ago, I think he was horrific. Bounced back last year, kind of picking up where he left off last year.
It's all about the walk rate with Kikuchi. He's always been a pretty good strikeout guy. The walk rate in 2022, that quote-unquote horrific year, and it was 13% walk rate. Your league average walk rate's like 8. So 13 is awful. But it went from 13 down to 7% last year and now down to 5% for Yusei Kikuchi. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. For someone who had such control problems early in his career, Yusei Kikuchi to have a 5% walk rate is pretty wild. And, I mean, this is why I use strike rate or ball rate, whichever one you want to use, to validate that change in control. Yusei Kikuchi is throwing a ton of strikes. He actually barely makes this list because he's not getting that many whiffs. But throwing a ton of strikes and getting that control under control, for lack of a better word there. But it looks really good for Yusei Kikuchi. A 3.14 Sierra, which is the skills independent ERA, is basically saying he's basically been this good beneath the hood so far this year.
Yeah, that's great to see. Tyler Anderson's confusing. Sonny Gray's been doing Sonny Gray things. I just want to highlight Jared Jones real quick.
Yeah.
72% strike percentage, which is the best on this board. 33% CSW, which is second or tied for third, I guess, on this board. 18.4% swinging strike, best on this board. So he has two of the top three types of strikes on this board. I think anybody that's watch the Jared Jones start, which I imagine most have, because that is much CTV. Him and Paul Skeens, man. But yeah, Jones has been amazing. So I'll give you the floor on Jones outside of, you know, the obvious here.
No, it's a good call out. And I learned stuff from doing these boards all the time. I did not realize how good I did not realize he was in the Scooble Chris Sale level in terms of these skills. It's unreal how good Jared Jones has been. It's crazy to see an 11%, 10% walk rate in the minors go down to 3% in the majors.
That's nuts.
I don't know how that happens. And so, yes, you might say, oh, well, he's going to regress back. Dude, a 72% strike rate. It's best on this list. Like, it's for as good as that's George Kirbyan. Pretty much. So it's just like, if you just look at, you know, you look at the minor league track record, and that's what a lot of folks use, and that's what we have, you would say that Jared Jones is going to fall back. And is he going to hold a 3% walk rate all year? Probably not. But like, the underlying strike ball ratio is there to support that good of a walk rate. And I'm not even that concerned about, like, I mean, the dude threw 126 innings last year, 122 the year before.
He's good. He's good.
So Jared Jones is fine from a workload standpoint. So this is damn impressive, man.
Yeah, I was going to highlight that. Then I was looking at his game logs, and he's gone pretty much six innings in all but two of his nine starts. And he went five in both of those, three in runs or less in all of them. So he's gone seven in a couple. So they're monitoring him, of course, but they're still letting him get at least six in, which if he pitches as dominating as he can, he might have more chances for wins than we think, just because Pirates are bad, but he's literally not giving up anything. And he's also not going like 8 or 9. So he's going to probably last most of the season, which is pretty insane to think. And Skeen should be able to hang around for a while too, because he pitched so much in college last year. He should be on paper stretched out pretty good. So you might get a Skeens, Jared Jones conversation for a rookie of the year, which would be a fun one to talk about come September with those two guys. Because we talked about it recently. I said, you know, if you're a Pirates fan, you know, it's been rough. We get it. But at least 2 out of every 5 games, you get some amazing television to watch. And that's, you know, that's a lot of sport and a lot of other teams can ask for, honestly. So that's
and like, O'Neal Cruz.
The Dodgers just get, or the A's just get the 9th inning once in a while. You get 2 games. Yeah. So that's pretty good.
Plus O'Neal Cruz. Sarah Sanchez with a really good point in the chat that saying that can't just be ABS, automated balls and strikes. So what we see, what that means, what we've seen is we have seen a just in general, a drop in walk rate, actually better control in the majors versus the high minors because of automated balls and strikes. Just the way that it works versus MLB having our normal umpires. Walk rates actually tend to go down from the high minors versus MLB. But again, in Jared Jones's case, and Sarah makes his point too, it's a 6% reduction in walk rate. Like, I don't, yeah, there's something else there for sure. But that is a good call out that oftentimes you will see walk rates go down when pitchers get called up. That doesn't sound all that intuitive, but the automated system is kind of driving that.
Yep, that makes sense. Good call by Miss Sarah Sanchez as usual. I'm going to jump around, and if I pass on somebody you want to talk about, bring them up. But there's Bryce Miller. I'm going to go Yoshinobu Yamamoto real quick on this one, because just for the fact you mentioned him, we got Shota, we talked about. But Yamamoto, 68% strike rate, 32% CSW, 12.4% swinging strike. He got blown up by the Padres in his debut. Gave 3 more runs to him the second time you saw him. Outside of 4 runs against the Giants, you're welcome. He's been very, very good, and he's getting at least 5 Ks in every start, usually going 6 innings in every start. He looks pretty much as advertised, as I would say. So the fact that these stats check out look pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, and we saw some late draft season dip from Yamamoto because of that outing in South Korea. But, yeah, he looks – I mean, just earlier I said I'd take him over Shota, so that really explains –
says it all.
A lot. So does have the 3 pitch mix and misses bats with a splitter and a slider and a curveball and his fastballs. Like, it's just, I don't know, he's got a pretty well-rounded arsenal. I like that too, when you go through batting orders the 2nd, 3rd, 4th time throughout the season.
Yep. No, he looks legit. I'll group these together, let you pick one. Seattle Mariners, Bryce Miller, Logan Gilbert, Luis Castillo. Now, like, Bryce is doing his thing. Gilbert's kind of struggled off and on, but overall been fine. He's not like George Kirby struggle. And then you got Luis Castillo, who he's just like the silent assassin. No one's really talking about him. He's just kind of steady Eddie. He's not going full Zach Wheeler, but he's not getting shelled. Like, he's been just a consistent lock him in and go. So I'll let you pick here. Who would you like to talk about between Miller, Gilbert, and Castillo?
I mean, I think Miller is the most interesting. Like, we know who Castillo is. We think we know who Gilbert is, and that, I mean, that's a really good thing. Bryce Miller showing the skill growth with the new split finger is very interesting to me. So that's basically a brand new pitch that Miller picked up this off season and is throwing it almost 20% of the time. And it gets that, like, just that combo of whiffs and ground ball, 16% swing strike and a 60% ground ball rate for Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller can also basically dictate when he wants to get a ground ball. I think this gets overlooked a lot. You just look at someone's Bryce Miller has a 37% ground ball rate on the season. Like, that's pretty mediocre. The sinker and splitter, which he throws a combined 40% of the time, both those pitches get over 60% ground ball rate. So he can get a ground ball whenever he wants. The four-seam fastball is just like a fly ball pop-up machine, and the four-seam fastball already was one of the best pitches in the game and has gotten even better, an uptick in swing strike rate on Bryce Miller's four-seamers. So this is someone who we knew had the base with the really good fastball and some prospect pedigree, and then you throw on the out pitch that he needed to be successful to drive this uptick in strikeouts, and Bryce Miller has delivered with that splitter. So he's the most interesting to me of the Mariners pitchers just because of that like year two skill growth.
Yep, that's fair. And I think as Brian Woog stays healthy, he's been pitching great. He might join this list in a couple months.
I know,
as well.
Dude. And man, that was scary. That was a miss by me. I thought he was toast when he
left the trainer after his first start.
Oh, yep.
I was with you. I was like, oh God, don't do this. Because I like, you know, honestly, like, what, at least three quarters of the time, that's what it means, at least, if not more.
Yep.
So the fact that he kind of was just precautionary and actually was precautionary for once was a nice feeling to be had, that's for sure.
Miller, Gilbert, Castillo, rest of the season. Who are you taking there?
Well, I'm always a Castillo guy just because I'm not like longevity wise, I'm a Castillo guy. So I'll stick with Castillo, but I have a feeling I know where you're going.
Nah, because I don't know where I'm going either. It's hard, dude. It's hard.
It is. They're all very good. Like, literally, picking one's not downplaying the other two.
I'd go Castillo. I think I'd go Castillo.
Just the consistency from him. I'll take that chance there with him. Zach Lytle is a fun one making this list. 3.44 ERA with a 70% strike rate, 27% CSW, 11.6% swinging strike. He pitched on Tuesday night. 5 2/3, 2 runs, 7 more strikeouts for Lytle. He's just been a consistent beast. He has had a couple like 4-run-plus outings, but for the most part, strikeouts are like just right there, which makes sense with a 70% strike rate. And he's one of the bright spots there in Tampa Bay. So really, really good stuff there with Mr. Lytle.
Yeah, another Tampa reclamation project. Where was this when he was on your Giants, man?
Well, it's called Gabe Kapler doesn't know how to start a pitcher that should start. He likes to play him for 2 innings here and there. And, you know, Sean Manaea is going somewhere and Lytle's going somewhere. And Gabe Kapler is, you know, an assistant coach now.
Well, Kapler also didn't get along with Lytle very well. Remember, Lytle was the guy who showed him up on the mound when Kapler pulled him.
Yeah, he probably told Kapler you need a little more coconut oil on those arms when you're sunbathing, buddy.
I can't laugh that hard because my voice is
messed up. Yeah, I know. Here's her coughing on me.
Jesus. Yeah. A big Kapler fan, aren't you?
Oh, I've never been a Kapler fan for all my life. When the Giants signed Gabe Kapler, I wish you could have seen how many text messages I got from people that knew that I hate Gabe Kapler.
Where's he at now?
I can't remember where he's an assistant coach. I can't remember where it's at. Yeah. Mm. He's not a Giant.
That's most important.
Yep.
So. Lytle.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm lukewarm. Like, I feel like, and we've seen Ray's reclamation project. It's like, it's good while it lasts, but then these guys either tend to burn out or what we're seeing with Eflin in year two, like something about the longevity of some of these Ray's reclamation projects we've been burned on in the past. And maybe that's not fair to Lytle, but this is someone who's been, I don't know, pretty mediocre throughout his career. And even still this season, a 19% strikeout rate, like Lytle barely makes the cut here because of the basically league average whiff rate. So I don't think you're getting a ton of Ks. You're getting someone who lives in the zone a ton. And again, that's a good thing. But when you don't have overpowering stuff, that can come back to haunt you as well. So I think of anyone we've talked about so far, Zach Lytle is the least... Like, I'm least excited about this holding up over the full season.
All right. Gabe Kapler is the assistant coach for the Miami Marlins right now.
South Beach fits him. Working on that tan, isn't he, Bubba?
South Beach fits him very well. He's going to have a lot of fun. There's a lot of guys who look like Gabe Kapler if you walk around South Beach about 11 o'clock at night on a weekday. So makes a lot of sense. I'll let you pick this one as well because we have 3 Minnesota Twins on the list. These are guys we all like to go into the season. Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, Pablo Lopez. Pablo Lopez might be scuffling from this list here pretty soon. But who would you like to talk about between Lopez, Ober, and Joe Ryan?
I'll be stubborn and talk about my guy.
Yep. I really want to hear what you have to say because it's been rough the last little bit here.
Dude, he's been even better pitcher this year than he was last year. He has.
Yes, he has. I know he has. But like, if you, yeah, there are people on Twitter that think he's donezo. So
he's not donezo. What are we doing? Basically,
he probably isn't.
Basically, everything is the same for Pablo Lopez, except for left on base rate, which pitchers do not have much, if at all, control over. And if anything, if you're not stranding runners, usually like your low strikeout guys, that's why you're not stranding runners. Lopez is not that. Lopez is a high strikeout rate guy with a 66% left on base rate. That number has been 80, 74, 76 over his last three seasons. I look at the pitch mix is basically unchanged. The velocity stable. The whiff rate's down like a point, but the Ks are there. The walks are not there, which is always a good thing. 24% strikeout minus walk. 296 Sierra for Pablo Lopez, which is the exact, pretty much the exact same number as Shota Imanaga that we talked about at the top of this list. So yes, it's just crazy how much I call them luck factors. BABIP, strand rate, and homer to fly ball rate can wreak havoc on an ERA. Pablo Lopez is going to be fine, people.
Yep. Yeah, you're probably correct. You probably are. But you want to talk about indicators. Let's talk Reed Detmers here. Bottom of the list. 5.80 ERA, but like a 3.68 Sierra, which is pretty promising. 66% strike percentage, 29% CSW, 13.3% swing and strike rate, all very solid. He's allowed carry the 2, 23, 28, 32 runs in his last six starts. Before that was electric. So it's been the struggle bus of late. Should we be buying into this? Just like the skills are there, you know, the whole thing, draft skills, not roll. Skills are there. The success has not followed lately for Reed Detmers.
Yeah, it's tough. Skills are absolutely there. Career best whiff rate, career best ball rate for Reed Detmers. But you're right, man. It's gone south, and the skills have trended poorly as well. Like the walk rate from April to May is up from 6 to 10%. Strikeout rate's down a couple points. So, like, has not been the same pitcher in May as Reed Detmers was in April. So, the other kind of unfortunate thing is, like, Reed Detmers has never really been good, like, on the surface, which is, like, you do want these guys to actually have results at some point. I mean, I guess he was okay in 2022, 3.77 ERA.
It's been rough. He hasn't put a full season together.
But, like, he's never been good. And that always worries me. But yeah, the skills, honestly, I mean, the skills are the best of his career. It's just that he hasn't proven he can get the results yet. And the skills in May are quite noticeably down from what we saw over his first five starts in April for Detmers.
Yep. No, that is very, very fair. Garrett Crochet, he first couple starts great, struggled a bit, been amazing ever since. ERA says 4.18. The Sierras and whatnot, this Sierra came before six more shutout innings with four Ks on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sierras was 2.52, better than Imanaga on that one. Crochet's been great. I've been playing him in DFS because he's always 8K because the machines just see the 4 ERA and can't figure it out. But Crochet, 66% strike, 30% CSW, 14% swinging strike. Dude's awesome. Pretty darn good. Innings will eventually come up for him. That'll be a bad time. But what's your thoughts on what we're seeing from Mr. Garrett Crochet?
Yeah, it would be a good DFS play if I ever remember to set my lineups.
Well, he was not on the main slate today, so you gotta
wait. Oh, he wasn't? Why not?
They started it 3:40 our time, 6:40 Eastern.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah. Yep. Shouldn't 3:40 be on the main slate?
That's a point of contention all the time because the main slate was 8 games and there were 6 games at 6:40.
It's 20 minutes. 14
game monster. So yeah, it always comes up. This is just all a point. But on Monday when there wasn't a lot of late games, the slate started at 6:40 Eastern, so they can play like 7 games.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Kapler instead, or?
Hey, we can talk about Giants blowing saves against the Pirates. What would you like to talk about, Bloomfield? It's been a great. Hey, did you know I barbecued and drank a lot of High Noons last week? That was fun.
Yeah, you did. You did. What the hell? What pitcher are we talking about?
Crochet.
Dude, he's. I mean, he's been a beast. I don't know where this came from.
Yeah,
I don't know where this came from, and I. You certainly can't doubt what we've seen from Garrett Crochet so far, but it's just like didn't pitch in 2022 through 12 innings last year. He's already at 51. I don't like of anyone on this list I'm worried about for the second half. It's Crochet. Like I Maybe he lasts and can go 150, but that would be like a miracle of medicine.
Yeah. I kind of hope he doesn't, because I'd like to see him be a starter for years to come. So,
yeah,
kind of would like the White Sox to not screw this up, but I just said it in my own sentence there. It's the White Sox. So buckle up on that one. All right. The last pitcher we're going to talk about here. Couldn't do it without it. The one, the only, Jack Flaherty. 3.79 ERA on the season with a whopping 2.29 Sierra. That was not a mispronunciation. 2.29 through nine starts. Only one win because it's the Detroit Tigers. One win. But Flaherty has a 66% strike percentage, 35% CSW, folks. That is number one on this chart, Mr. Jackson Flaherty. I'm just assuming it's Jackson. I don't know. 15.2% swinging strike rate, which is pretty good. So first, thank you for bringing my attention to him earlier in the season, because pretty much our last like three or four drafts all have Jack Flaherty on them. But the floor is yours. This was your dude. You called out like post 300 ADP. Like, this was a guy for you.
I didn't think it'd be this good. Like, this is crazy.
It's like Cy Young potential good.
I know. And granted, he only has a 3.79 ERA, and like you said, the one win to show for it, which kind of sucks because this is the best stretch of Jack Flaherty's career, which is just crazy to say. But no, I mean, I saw the reason why Flaherty was on my radar last year, this draft season, was he had the highest uptick in velocity of any pitcher, I believe. Maybe there was one other guy ahead of him or something, but from first half to second half, has held that uptick in velocity this season with the four-seam fastball. But the biggest thing for Jack Flaherty has been the slider. The slider has become an elite pitch, throws it a third of the time, misses a ton of bats, throws it for a ton of strikes, which a lot of sliders are just trying to get chases with them. A lot of times with Flaherty, if you pass on the slider, it's getting called for a strike. And that's why his CSW is so high. Like you said, number one on this list at 35%. So no, did not expect this from Jack Flaherty, but I will certainly I'll walk around the track on my victory lap here. This has been a boon, because he was free in drafts. Yeah, like 26th round, something like that.
Definitely free. He was like, I think I was, I don't even think like McKenzie Core was going sooner. I'm trying to think of who.
Yes,
I'm trying to think who my late guy was, and yours blows him out of the water. Mine might have been Alec Marsh, actually. And I think, because I was like my most rostered dude that late. Him and, but I don't know. Who knows? Not the point. The point was you dominated that one. So that was a pretty good stuff.
It just sucks you're not getting like the full benefit. Yeah. From fantasy, but still.
But there's a lot of pitchers this year where we're not getting those darn wins, which is pretty crazy too. Rico says statistically, Flaherty has been at worst a top five pitcher in 2024. He's first in K to walk and XFIP as well, probably close to it. Yeah, and Sierra. I was gonna say and Sierra. Wow. Joe just said and Sierra. That 2.29 Sierra, that is bonkers.
That's what if you're not familiar with Sierra, that's what Jack Flaherty's ERA, according to his skills, should be.
Yeah, not 3.79, 2.29.
2.29.
That's a run and a half lower. That's pretty impressive stuff, because like we started with the low ERA guys, so they're obviously going to have like a quote-unquote regression to a different higher ERA. So then these guys at the end, so the only reason why I wanted to say Detmer is because his is almost two runs different than his 5.8 ERA, but it's like hard to believe, where Pablo Lopez totally makes sense, Crochet totally makes sense, Jack Flaherty best Sierra in baseball. That is, it's impressive. Impressive stuff right there, Miss Bloomfield. So, want to give you your flowers.
Give my flowers. Can't take full credit. Did not see that one coming. But yeah.
Well, I just wanted to do it because we definitely point the we screwed up finger a lot more than a lot of places do. So yes, when we get it right, I want to at least point that one out to you. That's a good one. So, kudos. All right, let's Michael Cicchini in the chat. Investing in an ex-Cardinal should be in the forecaster. That's a good one. That should be your normal update every block. Well, did they play for the Cardinals? Should be in the blurb.
Yep. I love it. One. That's awesome.
All right. Let's take a few listener questions here. There we go. At futures_bet. This is the one with the potential inning situation. On a 14-team mixed league team, I have Sale, Jones, and Yamamoto. Chances they keep this up going into September. Actually, most of them should pitch most of the season. Sale might be a little shaky, but I imagine the rest of them are good to go.
Yep.
I think my most confidence is in Yamamoto making this work in September, weirdly enough, out of those three. And that's just more because I've never seen Jones go that far. And Sale, I'm sadly waiting for something to happen.
Agreed. No, that's how I would rank them too. Exactly. That's exactly how I would rank them in terms of in terms of workload in September.
Yep. Yep. So I think Yamamoto's your dude, but I hope Sale just go because they also want him in the postseason if he's healthy. Like that's one they got to really monitor and see how that plays out. So we'll see. Boom Zoom asks, I don't see his name on this list, so maybe you can tell us how the hell Ranger is doing what he's doing. Yeah, that up because I didn't have a chance to look at the list when this question came, but he's talking about Ranger Suarez, who, if people are sleeping under a rock, did it again on Tuesday night. 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts on Sunday night, which is just amazing what he's doing on the bump these days. Tuesday night, yeah. And he's just been ridiculous. It gives him 68 Ks and 66 innings now with a 1.36 ERA and a 2.64 xFIP on the season. So how's he doing at Bloomfield?
The reason why Ranger Suarez is not on the list, he's not missing enough bats. So you need to be above average in all three to get on this list. So it does kind of snub, I guess, the Ranger Suarez out there who are elite in two of the three, but just slightly below average in one of the three. So that's Ranger Suarez, who only, in quotes, has a 10% swing strike rate. That's, if you're going to point to like some weakness in Ranger Suarez's game, that's it. Not missing a ton of bats, but he makes up for it with, I've mentioned ground ball rate a few times tonight. I mentioned on every show. 57% ground ball rate for Framber Valdez just does not.
Ranger Suarez.
Jesus. Well, I could have said Framber Valdez.
It's usually a Framber thing, yes.
Yeah, 100%. It's usually. I just instantly go to Framber when I talk ground balls. But no, 57% ground ball rate for Ranger Suarez. And let's admit, a little bit of luck as well. But yeah, kudos. We don't often say league winner in fantasy baseball, but so far for Ranger Suarez, given where he was drafted, it's about as close as it gets to being one.
Yep, good amount of Ranger in my life, especially in Gladiators. So that is fun. That is fun.
I didn't even think about drafting him. I need to go back and
I was the way he finished last year. Yeah. The way he finished and the potential for innings late in drafts was what got my attention with Ranger, but couldn't say much more than that. Rand Simon asks, what is wrong with Pablo Lopez? See, I told you people are worried about Pablo. Between him and Christian Javier, my AL-only team isn't going to survive. Javier is an easy drop, but do we just bench Lopez for now and use a good middle reliever?
No. No, you keep going with Lopez. I think it'll turn around.
Yeah, I think after what we talked about when we discussed Pablo, I think you definitely are sitting pretty when it comes to that one, if necessary, for sure.
I mean, Michael, it hasn't really been that bad.
No, it's just the recent starts. It's got people's attention. That's just
a 1.12 whip, a 4.7. I mean, 4.72 ERA ain't great, but like a ton of strikeouts, 1.12 whip, like it's pretty good.
Yeah. Michael Cicchini says, are there guys with borderline good swinging strike percentages, like just less than 12%? You believe in more than others, like Kikuchi for me, or the opposite, good swinging strike, but you're out, Detmers for me. Thanks. So, like, swinging strike wise, is there any guys with lower swinging strikes that you're in? We'll start there. Like, you got Cutter Crawford's down there, Kikuchi. Is someone Bailey Ober, technically, I guess, piece of the list. So, any of those low swinging, Bryce Miller, who I know you like, is on this list.
Yeah. It's interesting to see Bryce Miller still that low. I kind of bagged Zach Lytle earlier, so I'll go with there. The lowest on this list, just barely making it, is Charlie Morton. I think pitched Tuesday night.
Yeah, he's tied with Kikuchi. It's crazy.
So a little bit worried, just given the age, how that progresses in the second half. It could be a cool follow up board to do, just like the honorable mention, some of the guys that just missed in one of these, and like your Ranger Suarez's, but don't have that readily available to me here.
Yeah, Morton on Tuesday night in Wrigley with the wind blowing out, 5 innings, 1 earned, 4 walks, 8 strikeouts. So
nice.
That'll do, Donkey. That'll do. I'll stick. I don't know if over qualifies at 11.7, but I love over. Big Bailey over fan. On the flip side, though, guys with high swinging strikes, are you like Jared Jones is up there, Chris Sale, Scooble, Imaniga, Reagans, Flaherty, Crochet, anybody else that stands out to you as a guy you're kind of worried about?
No. Anyone that makes this list with the super high swing strike rate, like instantly is one of my favorite pitchers. Just because you're able to get the whiffs. By being on this list, you're able to get the whiffs, but you're also able to throw strikes and thus limit walks. So, like, there's really nothing. Like, even like Cole Reagans, we haven't talked about Cole Reagans. Cole Reagans is on this list with a high swing strike rate, 15%. But he makes the list because he's throwing a lot more strikes than he did last year. The control looks a lot better. And so, like, I buy into that. So, you know, anyone with a high swing strike rate on this list, I'm like, I don't know, falling in love with, I guess.
Yeah, I love the swinging strike rate. If anybody reads my daily matchups article, I probably use it too often. But it's a sign that it's something I really love to see when they get to face a team that strikes out a ton and they have a high swinging strike rate. Pretty excited to stream that pitcher that day. Those are kind of checking the box things for daily stuff, at least for me. So I love that swinging strike comment. And then Sarah Sanchez commented on Twitter, my God, Tarik Skubal and Jared Jones, the eyeball emojis with the fire emoji. Because, yeah, their stats are just jumping off this page. It's pretty crazy. So, pretty cool stuff, Mr. Bloomfield. Pretty cool stuff. That was a very fun board. Very fun board to see. Like, you know, you got some of your guys you kind of expect on there, and then there's a handful of others you're like, wow, that's good. Like, or at least some might be a lot higher than you'd expect on this list, which is fun to see as well. So any final thoughts before we head on here on another Tuesday night?
No. Yeah, usually my brain is totally gone by this time of night. So I got nothing else. We'll be back Thursday. Fab preview.
Week 10 Fab. Week 10 Bloomfield. That is nuts. We're closer to the midway point than we are like the quarter point now. We're jumping to that next level of the spectrum, which is
so when you try to console me with all my crappy teams and say it's early, it's really not anymore.
It's still early, Bloomfield. It's early. And it'll be fun because Memorial Day weekend's coming up, and that's usually the cut point for a lot of players. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Fab results on Sunday to see who did what, who maybe spent too much time at the lake this weekend, stuff like that. It'll be pretty exciting stuff all around.
Who pulled a Bubba this weekend?
Who pulled a Bubba? Yep, I made a couple mistakes because I was, you know, we talked about this on the show before. Life comes first. Sometimes you guys got to enjoy life. Some things got me this weekend, so that was a bummer, but it wasn't the barbecue in the news. I'm talking about Fab. Different story there, but we'll be back with you guys on Thursday to preview your week 10 Fab as usual. But until then, make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intric. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 136. Catch you all next time.